Hey, you want that to go?
Now for some takeouts on stories we're following all this week. We're going to go first to Washington. Todd Zwillick, the Takeaway's Washington correspondent. Todd, after weeks of talking about how they're going to reconcile the three versions of the House Democrats' healthcare overhaul, after weeks of back and forth on robust public option, a mild public option, they're finally getting ready to release it. What is it?
Yeah, that's right. The House Democratic leadership, Celeste, plans to unveil their big healthcare bill this morning on the steps of the Capitol, you know, holding a big event. We don't know a ton about what's in this bill because they absolutely will not share it. Not last night and not this morning. We know a couple of things. The public option is not the robust public option that Nancy Pelosi and the Democratic leadership said they wanted. It's a public option based on negotiated rates. So that means it's not based on Medicare. It's based on the government negotiating, just like insurance companies do now with doctors and hospitals. And that saves some money, but it, according to the Congressional Budget Office, it saves about $85 billion less than if you did it based on Medicare, and actually covers fewer people because it's not as cheap.
$85 billion between friends, right?
Well, $85 billion to the Congress over 10 years. Yeah, that's money the progressives and a lot of Democrats would have wanted for coverage and to pay for other things. We also know that the bill is paid for in part by a surtax on individuals making more than $500,000 a year, families making more than $1 million.
So what is the reaction from other Democrats? Are we hearing anything from the liberals in the House? Are they upset about getting rid of the robust popular option? From the more conservative Democrats? Have they reacted?
Yeah, the liberals will be a little bit upset. This is an interesting reaction from a Congressman Marion Barry from Arkansas, who happens to be a pharmacist, an enemy of the insurance companies and the drug companies, and talked a little bit last night. He came out of a meeting with Nancy Pelosi yesterday evening and talked about his old nemesis, Billy Tozan, who was a longtime powerful congressman, chairman of the Energy and Commerce Committee, who, within a year of leaving Congress in 2005, became the president of Pharma, which is the big lobbying arm of the drug industry. Listen to Marion Barry.
I don't think we're getting near enough out of the drug companies and the insurance companies. I don't know the details, and maybe they've done better than I think, but if they're not squealing to the high heavens, we hadn't hit them hard enough. You know, if Billy Tozan sleeps tonight, we hadn't done enough.
His old nemesis, Billy Tozan, there.
Right, which I am assuming we will hear reaction from Pharma soon after. But so we don't really have an idea. It doesn't even sound like he has an idea of how stringent this health care bill is.
Well, and no, and it was interesting that he was asked to appear with, he and many, many Democrats were asked to appear with the speaker this morning on camera. They don't even know if they support the bill yet, so that's a choice a member of Congress has
that's
to make.
It's an interesting state of affairs.
It is. You asked about the progressives. You want to hear about them real quick?
Real quick.
Lynn Woolsey is head of the Progressive Caucus. They are heading up to meet with the president today because they wanted the robust public option and had said earlier that they will only lend their 80 or so votes, their voting block, to the robust public option. They're not going to get it. So here's what Woolsey had to say yesterday.
We will be looking at the words of the legislation. We will be insisting on it being as strong as it can possibly be. And if it isn't, then we will look at whether we support it or not.
Well, if nothing else, at least we can console ourselves that we know just as much as they do, which is nothing. Todd Zwillick is the Takeaways Washington correspondent.
We know a little.
Thanks, Todd. Now let's go to business with Louise Story, finance reporter for our partners, The New York Times. And Louise, help me out here because this is a little confusing. We heard that in August home sales went up, and that was great news.
Right.
But now we get the numbers from Case Shiller, another analyst, and they say home sales fell in September.
So there are a lot of measures out there. Case-Shiller came out a couple of days ago about August and said they went up. And yesterday we got these government numbers that showed them falling 3.6%. It's a little bit like shaking the magic eight ball. You keep getting a different answer. It's not consistent. And so actually, I'm a bit concerned because
With these new numbers,
because what we're seeing is a fear among home buyers that this government tax credit is going to end, because if you don't close the deal,
this $8,000 tax credit for new home buyers
has really propped up the market, and it's set to end by November 30th. And if your transaction hasn't closed by then, you don't get it. And in the last month, a lot of people think home buyers said, oh, well, I can't get a deal to close by November 30th. Forget it. And I kind of think about it like, you know, I do a lot of rock climbing.
Yeah.
And when you rock climb, your partner holds a rope. And if you get to hard move, they can kind of pull up on the rope to make it easier for you.
Right.
And I think the government is holding a giant rope on this housing market with artificially low housing rates, as well as these tax credits, which now they're saying they're going
they
to
can
extend them
until right.
next summer. And I want to know, what's going to happen when the government lets go of this rope? Because I'm afraid the housing market might really fall off that cliff again.
Well, I'm assuming that they're hoping that by the time April deadline comes around, that the economy will have rebounded a bit.
That is what they're hoping. And certainly, you know, today we have numbers coming out from the Commerce Department on the growth of the economy. And a lot of economists think that we're going to see the economy start to grow again, which will be a very big deal. But unemployment's not changing. And people still don't have jobs. And if that doesn't change, I don't see the housing market getting much better.
Okay, that's not very good news, Louise. Tomorrow we'll have to think of something happy.
Okay, I'll think.
The finance reporter for our partners, the New York Times. And our last takeout comes from you, our listeners. We talked yesterday about how even haters can love okra, but Troy in North Dakota called us.
Forget about okra. Find me a way to not hate Brussels sprouts. I can honestly say Brussels sprouts are the one vegetable that I would consent to eat only at gunpoint.
We also got this tongue-in-cheek email from Theodora. She writes, I thought you said you were going to take away my fear of the Oprah, which is fascinating because I realize the similarity, she writes. Both have African roots. You can get either one pretty much everywhere. Some people think it takes over things. So, Theodora, listen. Okra is O-K-R-A, and Oprah, the talk show host, is O-P-R-A-H. Totally spelled differently. However, the similarities you point out, you make a good point. Anyway, we also talked yesterday about a bit of a gender war happening on our website. We read a comment from Katya who said, not all women are obsessed with cleanliness. Well, Katya wrote to us again. She writes, I'm definitely one of those women who breaks the stereotype. I do tend to be the one who breaks out the vacuum to do battle with the dust bunny battalions, but my partner is always lamenting my messiness, not that he's perfect either, and I think the junk mail looks good decorating the table. And Melanie emails, I'm a slob and my husband is obsessively neat, although I am improving with age. And yes, women can be messy too. One of our listeners was called to move to call us over a mention we made, well, I made, about Detroit with our sports commentator, contributor Ibrahim Abdul-Mateen.
Detroit is improving every week, whereas the Redskins are not improving every week. So I would say that they're one of the most inept franchises.
You hear that, Detroit? Detroit is not the word. And so we got this response from Tom.
I always think that loving Detroit is like loving a porcupine or loving a cactus. Both are good.
8778 my take or mytakeatthetakeaway.org.